Hello, Cinnabar Moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle, Cinnabar Moths podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we are here with BC Foster, a very talented pen and ink artist. BC, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. This is incredible.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you. So I want to get right into it and ask you, how did you decide to be an artist? What got you into it?
Wow, that's a big question. I've been a pretty creative kid my entire life. But art and also a musician, that all came late, really late as far as me taking it seriously. But when I was a kid, I had a really big imagination. All I wanted to do was live in some kind of a fantasy as far as watching cartoons or a movie or just playing with your Star Wars toys, you know. I remember when I was like five, my mom came in and she said, "All right, turn off the Popeye cartoons," you know. And I remember going, "Okay," you know. So I turned them off, and I didn't want to go outside and play. I just wanted to, you know, stay in it. And you know, I'm five or six, and I remember looking around, going, "Well, I don't have a Popeye toy. What do I do?" You know. And there's a little Fisher Price like phone there with a red handle. You know, the old Fisher Price toys. And I remember ripping off the phone from the cord, and I was in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, one side of it looks like his shoulder and the other side looks like his fist. So I'll just play with this and just watch the rest of it in my head. And that's the first time I did that. And I've been doing it ever since. I mean, to this day, I found action figures and toys boring because I was such a visual kid that I could see the rest of the cartoon or the movie or the thing in my head, just playing like just something that was almost like a compass, you know, just to hold on to and just to focus. And people would, you know, growing up, they'd look at me like, what are you doing with that? And it'd always be some strange item, like a phone or a, you know, what are you doing with that thing? And it looks like you're just fiddling it with it in the air. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm playing, in that case, I'm watching Popeye. And as a kid, you don't think you're writing and directing in your mind. You're just playing like you would have playing with a toy, but I found action figures very limiting for my imagination. And then from there, it went on to like, you know, oh, look, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so He-Man was everywhere. And I realized, oh, the He-Man arm. I remember asking my dad, can you buy me a He-Man? And I remember thinking, I don't want the He-Man. What I want is his left or right arm, so I can take it off the He-Man doll. And now it's a muscular arm in my mind that can be Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, anyone I wanted. So it was far more valuable, the arm. So as a kid, I would have drawers full of arms and little things from different toys and stuff. So my parents were concerned. They're like, what is going on with you? We're not going to buy you toys if, because all they see is this kid breaking up toys. And I couldn't articulate what was happening, but I remember going, why doesn't everyone do this? Like, this is far more valuable. I would literally throw out the rest of the toy. Because it was clunky, like the arms of the, you know, I wanted it to be kinetic. I wanted it to move. I wanted it to dance. I wanted it to, and the less of the toy I had, and I had just enough to hook me in, that arm or even a head or something, and the rest of it just fell into place. So years and years and years of that year, I didn't realize until later that you're really honing this being able to see everything in your mind very clearly. You see the city that Batman's in, you're seeing all the thing like any kid would play. But I think as a young age, I really took it to another level. We would have car trips And my brothers would want their Game Boys and things like that. And they would look at me, and I would literally hours in the car playing with, it would be the oddest thing, a little orange hammer from a Fisher-Price medical kit. That was perfect. I still have one. I still use it. It's perfect. I can do a head and a face and an arm and a leg. And suddenly I can watch an entire movie directed by me in my head. You twirling. Now all you see in the car is me twirling around this little orange hammer. And my brothers would look at me like, "What is going on? You're weird. You're weird." And you would try and explain it, and you would almost feel bad for people. Like I said, like you can't do that. Like it's really fun. Like it's better than anything because you're kind of in charge of the whole thing. You can have, Marvel and DC crossovers. You can have all these fun things you can do and not worry about anything. You're just your mind is your only limitation. Now, years later, my dad one time came home with this big box of comic books. And it was one of the greatest days of our lives. Me and my brothers, we opened up this box and he said, "Oh, and my dad was in the military. So some lieutenant gave me this box of old comic books and I thought you boys would want them." And we ravaged that thing. We looked in there and it was a whole new, I didn't know what comic books were. And I'm looking at them and my brother, I have another brother who's an artist and is fantastic. And but we both were kind of reborn that day. It was like, look at these images, look at these colors, look at these. Like this is crazy. This is so great. And we just ate them up. But even then I wasn't drawing. I wasn't the kid drawing at school. I wasn't the musical kid at school. All through school, I was just I felt like a boat without a rudder. I didn't know what I wanted to do. All I knew what I don't want to do. I don't want to go play football. I don't want to play basketball. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. The closest thing I came to as a kid to an answer for anybody. I remember being 10 and we'd go around the table. I have a bunch of brothers and sisters. So we'd go around the table and everyone would say what they wanted to do. My brother would be, "I want to be a fighter pilot." And my other brother, "Well, I want to be a painter," and this and that. And cool. They would get to me and I would just be like, "Well, I think I want to be a Muppeteer." And my dad looked at me like, "Well, if I can't be a Muppeteer, if I can't work for Jim Henson, then maybe I can go work for Walt Disney." Because as a kid, I just wanted all that imaginative. I just really responded to storytelling. I just wanted to tell me a story, Dad, or a good joke, or I love that, And that's all I wanted to do. I just want to watch cartoons. I just want to watch a great movie. On to this day, on a Saturday, my big treat is, okay, I'm going to go watch some old movies. I'm going to watch, I just love visuals. I love dance. I love kinetic things, things that are moving, things that are in motion. And that's part of why my parents always called what I did with like arms and orange hammers fiddling. I hated that word. But they'd say, "What do you're going to go fiddle now?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And I remember being 17, 18 years old. And my dad looking at me like I was Linus from the Peanuts, holding his blanket. Like, "You got to stop this now. This is okay. You're getting to a point where," and I felt really like self, like, oh, I was conscious about it. Like, okay, maybe I can't, maybe this is weird. I got to stop doing this. But I could never stop because no, nothing was that good. Nothing was better than that. It's a very personal, private kind of space, and you can get lost in it for hours. A heavy, healthy fantasy life. So later, I started, I would say I was about 17 years old, 18, late for, I think, a lot of artists, a lot of people usually. They know really early on. But I remember I enjoyed comic books so much. I was like, I'm going to try and do that. let me just try. I mean, when I mean that, I don't mean any ambition of I'm going to try and be an artist. I was just like, let me just see if I can draw something from my brain, you know, because I'm seeing these things. I sat down at the kitchen table and I was terrible. Like everyone is. You're awful. Like I can't get my hands around this and I can't do any of that. And I'm like, okay. But instead of just stopping, I was like, well, let me go talk to my big brother. And my big brother, you know, he was always the artist in the family. It was kind of his space was the artist. I'm the artist in the family. And he's phenomenal. I'm not, you know, he's amazing. He's fantastic. But he early on was drawing and things like that. He's got a great imagination too. He never fiddled or anything like that, but he had his own talents. So I'd go to him and he would give me a pointer or two and I'd be like, okay. And then I realized, well, let me just get my bearings. I'm going to, like every comic book kid does, you open up a comic and you copy. You go, okay, I'm going to look at that and I'm going to try and do it and see. And that opened up like, oh, I see what they're doing. And then I remember being very, you know, and I ran to my brother and I said, look what I did. And he rightfully so said, well, you didn't do that. You copied someone else who did it. And I remember as a kid going, oh, all right. Okay, it doesn't count. Like I need to learn this for myself. So I immediately, it's tough, you know, it's the tough time of like, okay, you need to, you know, always learn. Like I'm a big fan of like, to this day, I'm learning. I'm a student forever. You know, I always have something new to learn. But to this day, I'll look at incredible artists and just, you know, my brain naturally just like a sponge, like, ooh, that's cool. I like what they're doing there. Store that for later. I like that's a good, you know, like something to feed on or just be inspired by. But at a very early age, I was very concerned about, I don't want to copy anybody. I don't want to look like a popular comic book artist. I knew at an early age, like take all the influence, but try and take all these little things and put them all together and make them your own and to try and have a unique style early on. Yeah. That's a long answer to your first question. I am so sorry.
I think it's interesting to hear about the origins of kind of your creativity was there and always, you know, blossoming and growing and being made use of. But the medium that you did it through was very abstract at first.
Yeah, it was, it really is. And you know, I loved writing in school. I loved music. Later on, a friend of mine introduced me to just songwriting. You know, hey, here's, you know, he would play guitar and I had a piano at home and suddenly telling stories was a lot of fun and doing it in a way that was musical and it was a little more communal than just drawing. I'm playing with people and I'm learning harmonies and I'm learning coffee houses and open mics and there's a community of creative people that you share this with. And that was a whole other side of my life. And that was around the same time I sat down at that kitchen table, started drawing. They both are equally important to me. There's not one that really dominates the other. I think as I get older now, I think I'm resting more into drawing and the art and climbing that mountain. But I'll always write songs. There's something about it that's unlike anything else. But as far as drawing goes, it's an extremely personal space. It's extremely, I don't let many people in. People, you know, I want to watch you draw, or these time lapse things are tough for me. These videos of people time lapsing. And I'll get requests, and it's really sweet of people. I totally get it. I would love to see, I love watching it with people. But, you know, I remember, you know, I'm a big movie guy, and Spielberg said in one of his you know, making of. He's like, I won't do a commentary. And he never has. He won't do a commentary through E.T. or through Close Encounters. And he said, just because it's, that's my space. And it's, I'm extremely protective of it. And I remember going, boy, that really, like, oh, I connect to that. I understand that. I'm very weary of things influencing me negatively. I'm very scared of, you know, sometimes a compliment can be just as dangerous as someone, you know, putting your stuff down and making you feel inadequate. There's sometimes someone going, oh, I really like this. You should do more of that.
Right.
And your brain naturally goes, well, I want to please people because I'm a middle child in a big family. So all I want to do is be the funny one and tap dance and to, hey, look at me. I'm here too. So you carry that with in your entire life. And when, you know, I learned at an early age, no, there's only one person to please. If you're not excited about something, there's no point in doing it. And trying to make other people happy is a constant fight. It's a constant, like, I don't want to hear a good review. And people are very sweet and I appreciate that. I'm just trying to say that you have to be very, I have to be very guarded with everything, negative things that come in and learn from them, go, oh, cool, that's good. You know, don't let your ego stop you from learning. Like, oh, that's a good note, you know. But at the same time, be wary of people trying to steer the ship for you, going, oh, why don't you do more of that? You should do more of that. This other stuff isn't... it's not my thing. And, you know, and it does, letting all that in is, for me, it's, it can be detrimental. And that's how you start to have a block. That's how you start to, you look at a white piece of paper and you're like, oh, what do I do? I don't have a lot of problems with that because I try and protect that space. When I sit down to a white piece of paper, it's extremely exciting. It's always very much, wow, opportunity. Look at this white piece of paper. It can be anything.
Space for you to create.
Yeah, it's inviting. It's, I have everything I need right here. And it can be a post-it note at the bank and a pen. It can be a, I'm a big fan of sketches. I'm a big fan of, you know, some of my favorite sketches and some of the, you know, people, the ones people really, really like, I remember going, oh, that's so funny because I did that sketch on a terrible piece of paper, lined, beat up paper in the middle of a meeting at work. And I should have been paying attention at the meeting, but I decided to draw. But I was relaxed. I was relaxed because it's on a terrible piece of paper. So what that does is your mind relaxes. You're not hard on yourself. And suddenly your hand is flowing better. And suddenly your mind is open to pen strokes that you're going, ooh, ooh, oh. And you're writing this like, oh, that's turning out. Wow. And you go, wow, why is it on this terrible piece of paper in the middle of a meeting on a Tuesday? And it's a pink post-it note. You know, like what? And I feel like this is like one of the best sketches I've ever done. And you realize later, oh, that's because I was relaxed. And I wasn't, there was no pressure on myself. There was no pressure of people around me. I think I'd have a real tough time in a job sense, creativity in a creative way, if that makes sense. I don't like boxes. I don't like, here's your assignment. I'm not good at assignment. You know, people ask, do you do commissions? And I'm like, I don't like doing commissions because it's an assignment. Hey, would you, for everything from draw my dog Fluffy to draw me a great Indiana Jones. And it's like, okay, but now you've let something else in that space, you know, and now you feel a bit of some pressure. And of course I can do it. I've done it. I've, you know, I give myself assignment, like, okay, I think I'll, it'd be fun just for me to draw, you know, Darth Vader or Luke Skywalker, just for me, just for fun, you know. And I can do that, but it's one of those things that nothing's better than absolute freedom when you go to draw. And that's why all my stuff is, you know, there are no titles to my work. I decided a long time ago, no, I don't want to influence anybody when they see this drawing. I don't, is it a good guy? Is it a bad guy? And people who don't know, my stuff is very, the origin is very pulp comic book, but with definitely some surrealism mixed in, and black and white, because I adore color, but color is extremely, that's a whole other, it's like, you know, there's the Rubik's Cube, and then there's the like 25 Rubik's Cube or whatever it is with all the little cubes. You're going, boy, there's a lot of layers here. And I have the most respect for people who play in paint and color, but I'm more fascinated with lines and textures and patterns and dots and separating spaces with shadow and light and then not just trying to do it with a, ooh, this pattern here will be different from this pattern here, and suddenly you do that enough and it's extremely different, you know. But yet it's still like a ninja with swords or something, you know. But it's not important who the character is necessarily, and it goes back to, I love stories so much that I don't title them, and I don't have names for characters, and I don't, people, you know, are you going to have a comic book? Well, no, I enjoy the openness. I'm trying to invite someone who's looking at the work to bring your fiddling in, bring your imagination in, look at it like you do fine art. Not that I'm a fine artist by any means, but you look at fine art and it invites you to think. It invites you to be creative. And if I title an art piece, I'm helping you steer your ship now. I'm saying, well, this character is this, and you know, here's the story and this and that. Let me share something with you. You know, this is what I tell my friends all the time. My favorite thing to do when I was a kid was, you know, I was an 80s kid. So a big thrill was to go into Toys R Us, right? You go into Toys R Us, and me and my brothers would go to the action figure section with Masters of the Universe and Star Wars and G.I. Joe. And when the new wave of figures came out, I remember running up to the aisle and looking at all the images of all the different characters. And my brain was just on fire with possibilities. Who is this? What is this? What is that guy? Who is this guy? And you'd bring the toy home and you'd take it out and you'd play with it a while. And you're like, this is, and suddenly your imagination is creating this story for this character that you're holding in your hands. Some of them I wouldn't rip off the arms. I'd actually play with the toys. and your imagination is going crazy. Well, then the new season of G.I. Joe would come out, season 4 or whatever. And that character you're holding is in the cartoon. And you're, oh, this is going to be fantastic. My guy, I love playing with this guy. And then you'd see the cartoon and you're so excited. Like, okay, what's he going to be like? And the voice was weird, or he was a bad guy and you thought he was a good guy, or sometimes it was even the opposite where, you know, and sometimes, you know, the character can be better than what you thought, you know, but oftentimes it was like, well, that's not who I had in my head at all. And it's different now. And you go back to your toy and you're looking at it and going, it's not the same. Where did my guy go? He's gone. This new guy is here. And that magic is so important. I sound like a little 7-year-old. I'm sorry. But that magic is so important that when I draw, people ask me, what's happening here? Who is this? What's going on? And I know what's happening for me, but I'll never share that. I don't I want you to have that. Go have it be, you know, have it be a good guy, have it be a bad guy, have it be whatever you want, you know, to put it in very simple terms. It's not important. It's like a Frank Frazetta painting. Not that I'm anything like him, but what I loved about his work was you saw these people in peril, these Conan the Barbarian guys, and you know, these warriors and women who are chained to a thing, and there's a big snake and it's coming in, and you're right at the moment of disaster, and that's when he takes a snapshot for you. And all those pulp, you know, I loved comic book covers were always the most fun, right? And when you see a comic book, it's always the best thing is the cover, because you're looking at it, yeah, it's inviting.
The comic book covers and your exposure to them, that influence you when it came to the type of art that you decided to? Because I know you mentioned that you go into like ink and everything.
Do you feel Yeah. You know, I dove into, you know, when you're about 22, 23, you want to be taken seriously, right? You want to, in everything you're doing, because all you're doing is, I want someone to take me seriously. I'm no longer a kid. You know, that feeling where everyone's like, you know, all right. I'm an adult now. I'm going to write really dark songs, and people would be like, whoa, this guy's deep. And I'm going to write about things I don't know anything about, because, you know, and you go through that process. Well, art is no different. You kind of like, well, let me, it's not important unless it's fine art is what the society kind of feeds you. It's not important unless it's Picasso or Jackson Pollock or something that's, you know, so beyond challenging that it can be intellectualized for the ages. So I started, you know, and you know, I have no problem telling people I am not, I have no professional education in art. I didn't go to art school. I didn't do anything like that. And I am not putting down education. Education's incredible. If you can go to art school, do it. You know, just understand you have to keep yourself, you have to hold yourself, protect yourself, because part of their job is to beat you up for the future as an artist. Like, people are gonna, you know, give you bad critiques and this and that. We're gonna help you with that in school. Well, you know, a lot of people who go to art school like me are extremely fragile people. So you start beating down on them enough, they're not going to want to do this thing anymore. They don't believe in themselves. I think if I had gone to art school, I wanted to, I just couldn't afford it. And I decided, well, I'll just do this. I'll just do it like Good Will Hunting. I'll just go to the library and spend $1.75 on, you know, on overdraft fees, just learning as much as I can, sponging all this up, then going to art school. But again, that's not knocking education at all. The thing I would have loved most about art school was the community, meeting other artists and being with other, because it can be very lonely. And that's where my music came in. I was like, well, I get it in that sense. But back to what we were talking about, I think it's important to keep those things open. I was doing, in my early 20s, to be serious, I was doing surrealism. I thought, well, what I can do is really start, I'd take, you know, and I post those along with my other work, is some of the earlier stuff, which is more, it's not comic book based. It's more just a study of pattern. And a lot of them are actually, they're actually pencil, they're lead, they're not even ink. bigger pieces. And I had this great job where I was on the phone, not a telemarketer, but I was working for the postal service. So people would order stamps and they would call in and make an order from a catalog. Well, after a while, the catalog was, no one was ordering from it. So I would sit there 8 hours a day and no one was calling in until the new catalog would come out. So I realized, oh, this is free art space. They didn't care what I did. They're like, you can play guitar for all we care, but just be here in case the phone, So I would just draw and draw and draw. Now, that was a great discipline, because when you're, instead of reading magazines, if you can draw every day for 8 hours a day, and learn that discipline, it's going to really help you. A lot of it's discipline as far as your mind is just kind of setting your mind to going, no, this is, I have nothing better to do than to concentrate on this piece right now. I'm not going to think about the next one. I'm not going to think about the last one. The most important thing right now is this drawing. So I would do the surreal stuff. The problem with the surreal stuff is, as much as I enjoyed it and as much of an education it was, I learned a lot and I really got my chops down as far as concentrating on a piece for 8 hours a day for 3 weeks. That's a lot of time on a drawing, and for some people, for painters, that's like, well, that's no big deal. I paint like, but for a pencil drawing, it's there's a lot of work there. And I realized that for fun, for recess, I was drawing superheroes and all of the things I like to draw. Like, okay, well now, okay, the stuff that no one takes seriously, including myself, I'm just going to go and draw, Batman or Superman or just a guy. I just want to draw a warrior with swords and, just whatever, a pirate, whatever, anything. And I realized, a couple years went by and I was showing another artist some my surreal stuff. And I pulled out these surreal drawings and he's like, oh, wow, that's great. That's great. Great. And out of my portfolio poured out all these sketches of fun things. my recess, and I'm embarrassed. I was like, oh, and I start putting it back in the portfolio, and I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, that's just for fun. And he goes, whoa, what's that? And he started looking through that, and he got energized. Everyone loves fun.
Yeah,
and it's okay to have fun. I realized in that moment, oh, I don't have to be tortured. I can have fun and actually take it seriously all at once. So in that day, and it was a good day, because I realized, what am I doing? I should concentrate more on this. Have fun. The whole reason you're doing this is to express yourself and be honest with yourself. Who are you? If that's who you are, to this day, I kid you not, Rasta, I'm sitting here and there's an orange hammer next to the phone right now. The orange hammer I fiddled with forever. When I met my wife, I had to tell her about it. I felt like it was I had to tell her some dark, deep, dark secret. And she said to me, I am fascinated. I am in. Tell me more. Tell me more about this. Yeah, she's like, this is crazy. Tell me more about this. She goes, I want to see you do it. Like, do it. And it was something because we met, I was 30 at that point. And, we're about to get married, and I realized, oh, I got to explain these things that, I would do. I would be 17. I have a panic attack if I couldn't find my orange hammer, if it was in a couch or something, like where'd it go, And my family would be like, you need help. You need help. And I'm like, you don't understand. So So I'd have to explain it to her, and she did a, you know, she was fascinated by it, and she was like, no, this is kind of the core of your creative being. It's like this is where you, this is your genesis. And truly was when I was five, I started doing it. And so I decided, well, it was a great sidestep to really get into more fine art avenues. And during that time of surreal work, you know, I did some pieces that to this day people really, really respond to. I think, you know, even more than the pulpy kind of stuff. Once in a while, I dip into that just to do it. But I realized I wasn't excited enough to keep that up about it. I was flat. I was kind of, I had no compass. I had no true north. I felt creatively like, I don't know what's next. Okay, I'm going to try and what's interesting to me. And I was struggling to keep things interesting. Now, and if you're working on a drawing that you're going to work on for 8 hours a day for 3 weeks, it better be interesting to you. Because I have a rule. I don't, if I start a drawing, I will finish it, even if I'm not excited about it. So you're very careful when you work, you're very careful. I am, I'm very careful about, am I excited about it? Is keep it exciting. Every line matters. Every line matters. When I draw today, yesterday I was drawing something and one line made a difference and I had to erase it and keep thinking, oh, and when I figured out that one line, I was good. I was excited again. I was like, ooh, like one little thing can really make a difference. And that's fascinating to me. That's the high you get. That's really exciting. It can all come down to the smallest little thing that no one else would pick up, but it matters to me. It matters to me. Nothing's better than life in a drawing. If it feels like it's breathing, the eyes are alive. You got to keep that excitement for every corner of that drawing. That's what I'm constantly working on today. But that day when that guy was like, no, this is great. I want to see more of this, you know, it didn't make me go, you know, I wasn't in a place where I'm like, well, I'm going to just do what you want because I want to please people. I'm a middle child. It wasn't so much that. It was just so much like someone going, no, I can tell just within the drawing that you're more excited about this. And he didn't say that, but you could see that in his enthusiasm. He was very much like, no, this is what you want to do. Keep like, that's really exciting. And secretly it is what I wanted to do. So, I realized that day, I was like, no, you know, it doesn't, it, again, that's a negative source influencing me. That's ego of someone else that I'm carrying with me that I have to drown out and not listen to those voices because everyone's insecure. You know, I'm an artist who didn't go to art school, who really could not really have many educated, intelligent discussions with people about fine art. But I have to know that about myself. But I'm also extremely respectful of it, respectful of people who know it. It amazes me. I was never one for, I loved history class because of the stories, but I was never one to maintain or keep names or dates in my head as the, to this day, I forget my own name. I love Edward Hopper. I love N.C. Wyeth. We'll talk about a storyteller, Norman Rockwell. I mean, these guys, you know, the one image and you have an entire movie in your head. But I also love Jackson Pollock. I love the kinetic energy of a Jackson Pollock. It's a different look into his work as far as he's not telling you a story. It's here's a rhythm. Can you see the music? That's Jackson Pollock. Can you see the music? Look at it. It's moving. It's kinetic. And it's still at the same time. How exciting is that? When something is still, it's not moving, but an image is moving at the same time as fast as a freight train. That's amazing. And that excites me. That's amazing. When I was a kid, I loved movies like West Side Story because of the dance. I didn't even realize it. But the way they move, look at how they're moving. It's the kinetic energy of people in motion. You know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And for those of you out there who, you know, Star Wars for me is like politics and religion. I don't bring it up at parties. I don't talk to because people are, it's so big that people have their opinions, you know, and yeah, very strong opinions. I'm such a sponge for kinetic energy that all of Star Wars, I love the prequels, I love the sequels, I love the original trilogy with all my heart. Original trilogy is kind of the heart of the whole thing, and everything else is just frosting on the cake. It's amazing. And I think Lucas was an absolute genius. I learned a lot of lessons from watching behind the scenes of all kinds of movies, especially Star Wars, and all the creatives making those movies. There's so many levels. You know, people, you know, what inspires me as an artist? I find just as much inspiration of watching an actor's studio or watching the Great British Baking Show or watching someone talk about dance. I don't care what it is. We're all, if you're a creative of some kind, if you're into woodwork or if you, it's all the same. Everyone's doing the same thing as far as learning how to put themselves into their medium as honestly as they can.
I think that's a very and
good. Yeah, it's
writing. Everything is a form right. of storytelling. Like you mentioned before, you're very moved by storytelling.
Yes,
storytelling through dance, through movies, these different media. I've always expressed something. There's this deep form of expression that
yeah.
has to take study. It takes effort to be able to have that expression
yeah.
truly manifested in what people do, right?
Yeah, you have to, you know, I want to tell young people, kill your ego as soon as you can. Kill it. It's going to do you no favors. Because you're going to get in your own way. Be humble, listen, learn, take it all in. Find art and find beauty in everything. I love watching the old Christmas specials, Rankin Bass, every year. The artwork in the old Christmas specials is incredible. And there's some weird Christmas specials, man. There's the Irish, you know, the Leprechaun Christmas and all these really weird. But I sit and watch them and go, wow, the art in these is fascinating. You know, when you go to put something down, when you go to say, I hate that movie, when you go to say, I don't like that book, I don't like that art, it's just as important for me to understand why. Why do I not like that? And oftentimes it had nothing to do with the art. It had something to do with me. You know, and the art critic, the movie critic, and I'm not putting down critics, I'm not. Do your thing. I think it's a form of expression that is important and it can be done extremely well. But remember always that, you know, you make a movie, you spend 2 years on it, you wrote, directed, produced it, put all your money in it, and it's your whole life. And suddenly it's in the big screen, you know? And some art critic who matters is going to go see your movie today at noon. And he has a fight with his wife. He stubs his toe, His dog poops in the middle of the living room. He drives and drives to the theater, and he's having a terrible day, and he's about to watch your movie. Now, remember, if it's a comedy, you're in trouble, because this guy's going to come in with all his stuff, because we're people. We're people. We come in with all our stuff. I listen to people who don't like the sequel movies. And the prequels, I remember living through the prequel era of the Star Wars, you know, back to Star Wars. I remember living through that era, and I would have a Phantom Menace t-shirt, and I remember getting all kinds of heat. People like, oh, geez, what are you doing? And I would be like, what's that? Like, oh, yes, exactly. Like that, you know? Exactly. And I love that movie. To this day, it's one of the ones I watch most. And I try and tell people, you know, it's so fascinating because I learned this, like, wow, a lot of these things are things you pick up, or you're reading the internet, or you're focusing on the wrong things, or you're not listening to the creator of it. You know, there are plenty of documentaries about why George did what he did. And every question I had during that time was answered creatively. And I went, oh, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. And maybe I'm getting in my way a little bit. Now, it's okay not to like things. There are a lot of things that I don't care for, but I'm very careful about understanding why. And sometimes that's a bigger lesson is, oh, well, what didn't I like about that movie? And what would I not do if I ever made a movie? That's a great lesson there. Oh, okay. Now, and that doesn't say anything about the movie. I'm not putting down the movie. I'm just saying what makes me me, why I would make different decisions. And understanding those distinctions, when you really, if you're a creative, you should have a lot of empathy for all creatives. If you don't like something, or if you're putting something down, or it's just not your taste, that's okay. It's good to do. But don't put that on the creative. Just understand that you're a different concoction, you're a different drink, you know, you're a beer, and that they might be a pina colada. You're just coming from different places, and things you don't understand you can learn from a lot, and sometimes I went, oh wow, when I really investigated something I didn't like, I learned to love it. I love movies so much. I don't mean to keep no, bringing up different movies. Mr. Holland's Opus, if anyone's ever seen that, my favorite scene in the entire movie, Richard Dreyfuss, and he's talking to his wife, and he's like, you know, this music teacher gave me a Miles Davis record. I think it was Miles. And he was like, you know, go listen to this. And the first time he spun it, he hated it. And then he listened to it again. He hated it. And listened to it again and again and again. And he suddenly couldn't stop listening to it. He had to keep listening to it. Something was burrowing in him. And he was like, oh, and it, we are. And that's why I say, kill your ego. You don't know everything. I'm going to be 80 years old and I'm going to be a moron. I don't know everything. And especially if you're 17, you know nothing. That I know nothing now, and I'm you know, in my 40s. You know, you have to. It's a healthy way to go, where you're constantly don't land anywhere necessarily. You're just constantly listening. I just want to listen and just let me learn from this. And my, what I come to won't be what someone else comes to. And that's okay. That's all right. We're in different movies. That's fine. Yeah.
Idea of landing in different, right. When it comes to playing different places, that's also true for not just your understanding of other people's expression, but also for how you decide to express yourself. Right. Mm. And so you mentioned before that you did the more abstract art, and then you also had the more character art and the comic style, and that you connected and meshed better with.
Mm-hmm.
And so that those are two different forms of expression, And one of them you didn't like as much for yourself, for your own expression of your art and your creativity, right?
Right, right.
And so how many different styles did you explore before you finally decided that ink art was kind of your comfortable place?
In high school, it was really when I started going with the, you know, when you start to draw, you can do a lot of different things. Drawing is, I think, for painting and for, you know, sculpting, things like that. Even, you know, people who want to make movies, you know, storyboarding and things like that. You know, it's a great thing to pick up. Because it for me, it's kind of it's the sun, and everything else orbits around it, because you're learning how to take what's in your mind and put it down on a piece of paper. So early on, I was rudderless. I was in a boat now, like, okay, I know I like this thing. I don't know how seriously to take it. I'll probably just be flipping burgers for the rest of my life. So this I have to have fun with, because I'm very prepared to be a starving artist. That's fine. That's not important to me. What's important to me is I'm honest with it, and I'm not making things I don't believe in. So I worked with paint. I worked with oils and acrylics and all the things you're supposed to do. Okay, this is a palette knife. Oh, that's cool. Like, you know, and then sculpting, boy, you know, sculpting, I tell my wife, if I had the room and a place to get real dirty, boy, I would love to sculpt, because, you know, going back to fiddling with an orange hammer, I see it. It's three-dimensional. It's moving. When I'm fiddling or playing with a toy, even, anyone can relate if they played with an action figure. Your vision is the camera. You're discovering angles. I'm below the character now. I'm above the character. I'm at a profile. So your head is already geared towards a three-dimensional view of whatever it is you're looking at. So I always thought that sculpting would be fascinating, and I did some of it. It's just, there's so much process in it. You know, there's so much things I just didn't have outside of school. And again, that's why art school is amazing. A lot of people who are creatives, they find their way because they're at the right age, and they're subject to all this incredible art and people when they go to art school. And that's what's great about school is, hey, here's a kiln, and here's a wheel, and here's, you know, try this for a little while. No, don't like it. Okay, why don't you come to the dance department? Okay, why don't you try acting? Whatever, you know. And you get to taste all these things, and hopefully after 4 years you discover what you really want to do. But for me, I was very limited because I was broke. I worked odd jobs my whole life, from flipping burgers to working as a bank teller. And I didn't have a lot of space and a lot of money to buy materials. Someone asked me just a couple days on Instagram, what grade paper is this? I'm like, I have no idea. I don't even know what the grade system, I don't know anything about it. And literally you can tell on the piece of paper, it was hotel stationery. It said the Hilton on it. And then you go, okay. And this is very punk rock and roll. And this is where my music influence comes in. You don't have a lot around you. Lean into it. I recorded all my albums, some of them on my cell phone, because I don't have anything. But then suddenly you realize, oh, all the great rock and roll and blues musicians didn't have much either. They're in a little room where a microphone is just hanging from the ceiling, And they're singing their heart out. It's more about the performance than it is the quality of the microphone. Well, I learned all those lessons through music, and I applied them to my art. I don't have anything. All my early drawings were cut up pieces of paper from shred at the bank that I worked at. I was a bank teller, and they would cut up these pieces of paper from old meetings. There'd be memos, and they'd cut them in fours and sixes. So instead of buying us post-it notes, because that was expensive, they'd say, well, let's take the shred and you can write your little notes on this shred on the back. So everyone had these little squares of shreds. And you can see on my Instagram, the ones that are like little squares and little drawings, those are literally from the days that I was a bank teller waiting for someone to come in. And I'm just standing there waiting for someone to cash a check. And I would take one of these little things and just draw. I drew all the time. Draw all the time. I'm so lucky, and I'm not putting them down, but I'm so lucky I wasn't into video games. I'd play Super Mario Brothers 3 for about 20 minutes, and then I got bored. I was never very competitive as a kid. I was never really like, ooh, I got to win this thing. I'm very into, like, to this day, I don't like reality cooking shows because everyone has to win something. Why do we have to win? Can't we just, isn't it just making the cake? Isn't that the thing? Why does someone always in America have to win, you know?
I think something you touched on is the sense of community that you found with art, and the sense of community that can be found, like, with art school to explore different things is,
yeah.
You mentioned before that you enjoy community. I think that's kind of a contrast to competition in some ways, where competition is very much you trying to be better than other people, whereas community is uplifting each other.
Absolutely. That's why I like the Great British Baking Show is, yes, it's a competition. Someone's winning, but they're low stakes. Everyone's rooting for each other on the show. Everyone's helping each other out. Everyone's positive with each other. It's not cutthroat. Why do we have to be cutthroat about this? You know, I would almost prefer the show to be a class. Can't we just, you know, see how they started and see where they are at the end of the show, where everyone just got better? One time I'm drawing and a girl comes up to me, and I'm just drawing in the break room because I'm at work. And she is very nice. She says, oh, that's really great. That's really great. And she's watching me draw. And I said, oh, well, thank you so much. It's so nice of you. I appreciate it. And she says, right after, she says, but what are you doing with it? I'm like, I look at her like, what do you mean? You know? Isn't making the thing enough? No, no, no. You have to monetize it. It's not worth anything until you can tell me how much you sold it for. That really bugs me. I have no ambition. You know, you see on my Instagram, I have an Etsy shop now. That took me 30 years to. I'm terrible about ambition to sell. Because you remember, I'm a guy working fry cook. I don't want anything to influence my art, especially money. I don't want, like, oh, I sold this. I should make more like that because it sold. That's how your brain, that's how people's brains work, you know? And I'm not putting anyone down. That's how we are. But I was kind of lucky I didn't play video games for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I was lucky that I didn't have, you know, great success in art early, where I'm selling things and stuff like that, because I learned the value of my freedom. Oh, all those things could be chains. And this is just for me purely. Remember, this is just for me. I'm not speaking for how people should be. But what I learned for me as an artist is I have to be really free of shackles when I go to look at that piece of white paper. I would sit at, like I said, I would be at the bank and I would just draw all the time. The other thing I would tell people, if, and no one's asking for any of my opinions or advice, I really don't have much advice to give, but I will say this: 90% of your art is the doing. Turn off the TV, turn off your phone, turn off the games. tell anybody I'm going to be gone for 2 hours. I'm going to go draw. I'm going to go write a song on my guitar. I'm going to go paint. I'm going to go, I have to. And then you realize you get addicted to it, just like you do your video games or your books or whatever it is. You know, and I'm not dogging video games. There is so much amazing creativity in video games. Oh my goodness. I look at video game art and I'm just like, this is unbelievable. I could never come up with some of the stuff that people are coming up with. I have nothing but admiration for it. What I'm talking about is your time. You get 24 hours a day, and one day your train will stop. And I draw like a man who knows he's going to get hit by a bus tomorrow. That's how I go. I have a drawing behind me right now. As soon as we're done, I'm going to take it out and I'm going to draw till about 5:30 today. And I'm taking time off to do it. I would have started an hour ago. But I realize that I'm in my 40s. One day I'll be in my 60s and my hand's going to be shaking. I'm not going to be able to do it anymore. And that scares me a lot. And that's why everything I want to be excited about, and I want it to have energy, and I want it to mean something, even if the meaning is fun or it's cute. Cute is fine. I love the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. I love cute. There's nothing wrong with cute. Once in a while, I'll do a Christmas drawing or something that's cute. There's power in cute. It's fine. It's all good. Do it all. Don't shackle yourself. Don't be that 17-year-old person who always tells yourself, that's not cool. I can't do that. That's not cool. It's got to be edgy all the time. It's got to be punk rock. It's like, no, there's a place for that. That's great. But remember, too, that one day that 17-year-old boy will be a man who's 35 and he'll have a little daughter who wants to play tee with him. And he's going to go, this is amazing. Oh, cute is good. The world is run by cute. It really is.
Yeah,
kittens and all. Yeah, you see it in so many different ways. It's so powerful. Don't deny it. Don't be embarrassed by it. Don't be embarrassed by anything. My older brother one time asked me, you know, he's a great artist and I have nothing but respect for him, but we don't really know each other very well these days. We don't talk much, but when we do, we try, you know, and the older you get, you really become just strangers who shared a childhood. And we're two creatives and you think we'd connect better on things, but we're very different. But he would ask me, you know, what are you listening to right now? You know, and I said, oh man, I just found this great Cyndi Lauper compilation, you know. And he looks at me like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, what's wrong with you? Why are you exactly. Exactly. And now, you know, and I don't think he thinks anything's wrong with Cyndi Lauper. I think he's just always, you know, I don't mean to pick on my brother. He's amazing, you know. But sometimes people carry their 17-year-old angry selves with them. And I like to say, no one's watching your movie, man. And what I mean by that is your ego. Your decisions are still trying to appease some 17-year-old self who's still trying to be punk rock. Like, no one's watching. No one's sitting there going, oh, he listens. You know, you're not in a movie. You're not a hero in a movie. You can listen to Cyndi Lauper and no one will even know about it. You're the one who's stopping yourself from incredible art. Don't let your pride stop you from watching incredible things that you're not supposed to like. Like, oh, that's cutesy. I'm not supposed to like that. I love vintage cartoons, vintage animation. I will sit and watch for 2 hours the Care Bears cartoon from the 1980s. I'm in my 40s. And someone could walk in and go, what are you doing? Like, this is weird. And I go, yeah, it is weird. I totally acknowledge that. But I also understand some 50-year-old, 35-year-old, 40-year-old person went into the office at the Care Bears place back in the 80s and drew this stuff and wrote these stories and made it. And it also brings me back to my childhood. All those things are valid. They're real. It's okay. We don't have to be cool all the time in our head. We're not, so many people just don't do things because they think, well, I can't do that. Why? No one cares. And in fact, these days it's a great time because people embrace it more. And people go, yeah, there are grown men who love My Little Pony. Awesome. Go do it. Fantastic. Go live your best life. Because your train is going to stop soon. Don't waste time on what other people think you should be watching. Don't waste time on painting or drawing on something that you think your dad wants you to or your best friend wants you to. Don't waste your time. Listen to what gets you high. Listen to what makes you happy. Find that wave. A friend asked me one time, how do you start a drawing? How do you go about it? Like, are you, do you think of something and you draw it? Oftentimes it's not. For me, it's, I call it like the cloud game. You know how we all look up at the clouds and you see a rabbit or you see a dog or something like that. I'm doing that with my pencil. Sometimes I love to draw when I have nothing in my head. I almost blank out and start moving the pencil and let my imagination grab onto something. And that discovery for an entire drawing is so exciting. There was no premeditation whatsoever. Now sometimes I do. Sometimes I think I want to draw this guy, right? I want to draw a cowboy. It's as simple as that. I want to draw a cowboy. I want a guy with a holster and I want the cigar to hang and I want all the things, right? And you start to draw I always laugh by the end of the drawing. It's not anything like what I started out to be, because when I first started drawing at the bank, remember, I didn't have any pencils. I just had the beat up bad pens at the bank. And what was great about that was I couldn't erase. I couldn't start over. And that's great because you're forced to accept, I've been working on this drawing for 3 hours. I just messed up on the arm. I just messed up on his leg. It looks awful. What do I do? Do I throw out the drawing? No, I'm not going to throw out the drawing. What do you do? Well, maybe it's not an arm. Maybe he's got a gun. Maybe it's suddenly it's a robotic android thing. And now you're moving. Your creative juices are going. And you're like, oh, and then I can, and suddenly it's way better than a cowboy. And it only came out of your mistakes. Sometimes, as Jeff Bridges said to Robin Williams when they were making The Fisher King, Robin Williams was new to acting still, and he messed up and they cut. And Jeff Bridges came up to him and he said, next time you make a mistake, go with it. Keep going. Mistakes are a gift from God. And he's so right. Mistakes are a gift. Sometimes your mistake is going to be, oh my gosh, I never would have thought of that. But look, because you're allowing your brain to be open to possibilities. And it's like when I draw, it's like I don't surf, but I'm sure it's like surfing, where the wave, the energy from the water is part of the decision making. It's half of the relationship in the moment, in that second. The wave actually has control of what you're about to do. I feel the same way with art. Let it flow with it. Get, go with the wave, not against it. See what the wave will bring you. See what you can do with that wave. Get into it. Get find a relationship with that drawing. because always be open to it changing. That's why I'm not very good with assignment, because it suddenly I'm in a box. My brother, the painter, he went to Massachusetts College of Art, and he took me when I was in high school because I loved art and I wanted to go and I wanted to see all the things, you know. And I was rudderless. I didn't know really what I wanted to do, but I thought I did. And when you're 17 years old, you want to be a comic book artist, or you want to be an illustrator. I want to be an illustrator. And I have all the, because my heroes were Norman Rockwell and all these comic book guys, John Romita Jr. and Rick Leonardi. These are, if you don't know these guys, go check them out. These are these great 80s artists. They're wonderful. Scott McDaniel. Anyway, he would take me and I'd ask him, please, please, please bring me to the illustration section, because that's what I want to do. I want to do something like that, Disney or anything. I want to do that. And he said, of course, great, let's do it. You know, so he would go and we would go and I walked in, and the first thing that struck me was it was all cubicles on this floor. I was like, huh, it's like a business office. That's strange. And then I'd walk through and I would see everyone's stations, and they would have a Snickers wrapper like tacked to their wall, or a Coca-Cola can, or all these things. And I realized, oh, that's their heroes. Illustration is a company that says, hey, we need this. We need to sell it. We need you to use three colors. It needs to be in this little box. It needs to be poppy, but not too poppy. And we'll let you go work on it for 3 weeks, and then we'll let you know if we like it. And if we don't, we won't pay you, and we're going to go with someone else's thing. Now, those restrictions to me as a creative, it flooded in like, oh, that's not what I want to do. I'm not good at that. You know, those are good exercises. I'm into exercise. I'll give myself assignment for exercise. But as far as a life, something that energizes your engine for your life, that's not something I want to do. And then my brother took me up to where he went to, he did his studies. It was the fine art section. And, you know, people get confused when I say fine art. I don't mean, you know, oh, I'm a fine artist as in like, you know, it's a term used like jazz it's a style. It's like classical music, jazz, punk rock. One time I told a fellow artist, I was like, well, I think my stuff is a little more on the fine art side than the illustration side. He took that as a knock on illustration. I'm like, no, I'm not. And like I was saying, I'm a fine artist. I'm like, no, I'm saying it's a state of mind. I went up to his section, my brother's section. And immediately we got at the elevator, and it was it looked like an abandoned warehouse in New York City, and huge open floors with huge canvas and paints everywhere. And people are, one guy who was literally painting with ketchup and mustard on old pairs of jeans that he got at Goodwill because he couldn't afford canvas. And he was doing his work on these pairs of jeans. And my mind was blown at the freedom. Oh, the freedom. Now, again, every artist has, you know, I say freedom. Everyone builds their own challenges. And I'm not talking about like none of that. Everyone wants to, everyone's pursuing something. You're always climbing some kind of mountain, but you were doing it A, for yourself, and B, in the most personal way possible. And you're really digging deep. And that really shook me. It made me understand, oh, I really value my freedom. That's what I value. Yes, I love illustration. I love those guys. I have nothing but, I just drew a couple Christmassy cartoon things to put out at Christmas time because I am a big fan of cute. I'm a big fan of Christmas. I'm a big fan of cartoons. But I allow myself the freedom to do that. I allow myself the freedom to have a dark piece that can haunt me. And I try and express that, but I also on the very next day can draw a snowman, who's just happy that he's alive for the season because he knows he's going to melt. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with enjoying, Care Bears and also enjoying Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones. I'm a huge true crime fan. There are different parts of your brain, and the more you explore all of it, the better your work is going to be. The more you accept all of it, the more you think of creative things out there, be it cute or be it funny. Think of those things as colors that you don't want to deny yourself. I want more colors. I want more crayons. I don't want less. I don't want to work with five. I want to work with 500. You know, I heard Marilyn Manson, not to pick on Marilyn Manson, the guys, I have no problem with Marilyn Manson, but one time in an interview, it struck me. He said, I would never use the word happy. And my first thought was, I don't want anyone to take any words from me as a singer-songwriter. And I wrote the song on one of my albums called Happy. I think it's called Happy. And that's the chorus. And my challenge to myself, the exercise, was write a song where happy is the center of it. And it wasn't a happy song. It was very much the opposite. But the point was, I need that word. Don't take a word from me. I want all the colors. I need Sesame Street. I need the Muppets. I need them. I need Star Wars. I need these things to keep me keel. I need Tim Burton. I need goth. I need darkness. I need light. I need the contrasts. Contrasts. I need that dark and I need light. And I need them to live in the same space with energy and with motion. And being still at the same time. That's so exciting to me. And it's more exciting when I have no rules, when I go to the next piece of white paper and I can go, I can literally draw anything I want today without these voices in my head. And that's the other thing. When we had started talking, you asked me to do this and I was very upfront. I said, I'm actually a very private person.
Yes, you did.
I value it, not because I don't like people. I love people. But I also am very scared of people. When I say I'm scared of people, I'm scared of, I sponge up a lot of things and I sponge up influence very quickly. And it takes a lot of work to, overcome myself. You're influenced by something. And if you let these voices in, you'd be very careful of voices you let in because they steer your ship for you and you don't even know it, you know? At the same time, you have to be open to learning and you're not going to learn by caving yourself off as a hermit. So you do a balance. Be very careful, I would say to other artists, be very careful about who you let into your very personal space, who you listen to. Who you put on a pedestal. Be careful about those things. I used to listen to podcasts a lot, Star Wars podcasts, and I realized after years of it that I don't want to do this anymore because I was thinking their thoughts after a while when I would watch the movies. I would have their opinions, and I remember, that's not my opinion. That's what that guy said on that podcast about Return of the Jedi. I don't know if I agree with that. And I found myself, I couldn't just enjoy Return of the Jedi anymore. All I'm listening to in my head were all the debates happening about Ewoks and Anakin and all the things that the podcast feed on. And I'm not putting it down. If you love that thing, go do it. I love the community for a long, long time. But I had to turn it off because it was affecting my enjoyment of one of the greatest things I love to do, which is watch Star Wars. I love escaping in it because it feeds all my things. I love lightsaber fights, the motion of it. I love the art decoration of everything. I love how everything looks like is from a junk pile. And then I love in the Phantom Menace, everything's smooth and slick, like a beautiful boat, something that's tailor-made by hand. I love all those visuals. I love all of it. And what I don't want is someone to come in and give their opinion. It's like, I tell my wife all the time, Star Wars is like Christmas morning, right? Everyone's got their Christmas morning. What you don't want is to invite people into your living room and tell you how to do Christmas morning. Oh, you should put the tree over there, and then you should have the gifts over there. Yeah, we all love Christmas, but this isn't fun. And that's why I say I don't bring it up with people, because everyone has, rightfully so, and that's wonderful. Everyone has a lot to say about these things, religion, politics, and Star Wars, and that's great. But I've realized I've had enough of filling my head with other things like that that don't really serve me well. They actually hinder me. And getting back to art, compliments and things like that are great, but sometimes I can feel them steering my ego. And I'm very scared of my ego. The best thing you can do as a creative is kill it. Kill it. Destroy it.
I want to follow up on that a little bit. Ask, when you talk about like receiving compliments, receiving recognition for your art, right? Does that tie into your interest when it comes to, for example, winning an award? That type of thing interest you at all? Like, for example, if your art was out there, you have it out in the world, right? And people say, we think this is amazing, and we want to give you an award for it. Would that be something that you'd feel uncomfortable?
I would feel definitely scared by it, because I'm scared. Can you hear me? Did I?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. I would definitely... First of all, it's really the farthest thing from my mind. Like I said to that girl, the work is the reward. This is what I'm doing with it. I'm making it. Those things, you know, you have to be careful with that, because you want people to know, oh my goodness, of course I acknowledge that you're being so kind and you're giving me an award. That's wow. Well, thank you. Of course. Thank you. That's amazing. But that being said, I think about Quentin Tarantino. People know this, but when he first wrote, I think it was Reservoir Dogs, he wrote it in the rat-infested apartment with cockroaches, and but it was a wonderful creative space, and he was hungry. He was really hungry. He wanted to show anyone what he could do. And that's a thought that every artist should have. It's the sophomore slump albums with bands. You know, the first album is always great because whoever wrote the album spent 3 years, maybe 10 years, writing these great songs and playing them out and playing them over and over and over again, right? And then they put it on an album, and it's fantastic, and it blows up, and everyone's like, this is amazing. And they spent the next 2 years on the road playing that album. And after that, they come home, and the record company says, well, where's your next one? And they go, well, I'm going to, you know, and the sophomore slump is, oh, well, usually the second album is talking about, I'm on the road, and the road is hard. And playing from town to town and city to city. And you're going, yeah, because that's what they're experiencing. And some of those albums are actually really good. And it's not it's a comment on, like, protect your space. It comes down to that. So awards, money, if I sell some, you know, I'm not selling stuff. I work extremely hard, but I try to pay the bills. I try to buy bread, And that's why I have an Etsy shop. You know, we're having a lot of fun. We're making backpacks and again, don't be afraid to have fun. It's okay. It's okay to have fun. We're making t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff like that. And purely just to help with the bills, you know. Never when I was flipping burgers, I decided a long time ago, well, this might be my life. I might just have to rent a room with five other people do the day job and then come home. But the only thing that kept my life worth living, I had some rough years, a really lonely time. I only had one or two friends. My family, they were all doing their things. And I was broke, you know, but I never stopped drawing. I never stopped writing music. It kept me going. It's everything I want to be and want to do. Awards, come or not, that's not the fuel for anything. It should never be. It should never be. You're never going to get your best work because all award is it's recognition. That's great. But after the fact, if you're looking for more of that, and I'm victim to that, like, oh, I want more attention because I'm a middle kid out of, nine kids. And I always want I always want to be the funny one. And I always want to be, you know, but it's really just, self-preservation. It's really just trying to be seen and feeding, you know, trying to get attention. And you can do that when you're a kid or even a young adult. But after a while, it can be hollow. It can be shallow. There's nothing really there other than look at me, see me. It's important, like a lot of, you know, I'm a performer too. Well, I used to be. I used to play a lot of open mics and play out. And me and my friend John Malloy, who's an incredible artist, incredible songwriter. John Malloy is great. But he taught me a lot about music, just chords and harmony and writing. And he introduced me to everyone from Springsteen to Tom Waits to Wilco to the Beatles, all of it. We grew up together. And then we started feeding each other because he would write a song and show me, and I would write a song and show him. And next Friday night, we would show each other songs and then go play it on the streets and go play it at an open mic. And you only need really just one person to tell you. This is before Instagram, before the internet, really. And I just had one or two people that would go, oh, I like that song. That's a good one. What are you going to write next? And I would be on my piano and he'd be on his guitar and he'd show me a song. And we didn't play video games. So we didn't do normal things. We were down in a basement writing songs and playing the Everly Brothers and playing, playing all kinds, anything we can get our hands on and talking about songwriting. We would go hit coffee shop after coffee shop, drinking coffee out in the cold and the snow, walking and talking, and we weren't talking about girls. We weren't talking about the game. We were two odd kids talking about the best Paul Simon song. What's our favorite? A guy like Paul Simon shouldn't have this many good songs. It's not fair. conversations, you know. That was me at 16, 17, 18. We were having those creative conversations, and I, you know, those things influence all your work. Those great conversations about music and opening up and being not saying no to things, that influenced all my work. That's what I was saying before. You can take lesson from any kind of creative. It doesn't have to be in your field to apply it. I've learned things from watching chefs and I apply it to my drawing. My mom was into quilt making and I learned a lot from looking at her and quilts in general. And oh, look at the patterns. Those patterns, the patterns are endless. I can apply that to my drawings. You know, it's just feeding off of different things and bringing it to as a, you know, filling up your toolbox, you know. But as far as awards and things like that. I don't think you're going to be seeing me get any awards anytime soon. I think it's I'm very humbled by everyone's been as afraid of people as I can be. Everyone on Instagram so far has been so kind and so warm, and I didn't know what to expect. My big goal was to have like 50 people like enjoy my work and go, wow, that's 50 people out there saw a drawing of mine. That's huge to me. Yeah, because you just, you know, again, being a hamburger flipper, and you're showing the guy next to you who's making the fries, hey, look what I drew. When that's your only outlet, having something like Instagram or Bandcamp, all my albums are on Bandcamp. Having something like that where you can just tell someone, hey, my entire life is on Bandcamp. My whole life musical work is on Bandcamp, and you can sit and listen to it. That's insane to an 80s kid, you know, to where you're making demo tapes and recording on terrible things, trying to get heard at the local free radio station that will play your stuff at 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. That was a highlight for me. One time I heard my song on a radio in my local town and I flipped out. I just couldn't believe it. You know, those, you know, temper your expectations in life, you know? But I'm just happy I haven't been hit by that bus yet. I'm just happy I can keep drawing, you know? That's all I want to do. I'm in a very fortunate position because my wife and I made a life change, and I get to now be an artist full time. It's not lucrative yet, but I work hard at it. And I know as long as I'm working hard, I'm going to be okay. As long as I'm trying to be true to my work and myself, I'm going to be okay. And I love my wife for that. She takes good care of me, and she's incredible. She's my hero. And another hero of mine is John Malloy, who's a great singer-songwriter. He's on, I believe, on Bandcamp too. Write me on my Instagram, and I can tell you the stuff about him. He's an incredible singer-songwriter. And my third hero is my brother Matt, that painter, the guy who doesn't. We don't get along very well as far as artistically. We land on different pages of the book, but he's an incredible painter, and he was an incredible influence on my life growing up. Always wanted to try and please him, and that was hard to do. It made me work harder. Yeah, I would bring him drawings as a kid and be like, look, I did this. And he's like, yeah, you should fill the page. I said, what? He said, look at all this white. I said, that's a great picture, but fill the page. It's so boring. Now that's rough, man. You spend 3 hours on that as a kid and you just want someone to go, oh, that's great. Wow, you're doing great. And my brother gave me the gift of being hard on me when I was 17, and he was in art college. Yeah, and he was because he was probably getting that at school in art college. He was probably, people were probably being hard on him and making him work harder and think before he drew, think before you paint, think before you write. Understand what you're doing, and if you don't want to think, and if you just want to be free flowing with your writing or your painting, your drawing or your dancing, that's great. Understand that before you do it, though. You have to understand you're doing that. That's a great practice. So, you know, thinking and understanding. He would ask me, why did you do that? I don't know. Well, that's fine, but maybe think before you draw, because if you have purpose, understand what you're trying to do, because it can, that's important sometimes. So that discipline was important for me, and he was sparing with his praise. And when it happened, you floated, you know. But now I'm at a point where I know what I am, I know what I want to be, I know what my goals are. They're not awards. They're not fame. They're none of that. I just want to help with the bills, get milk and bread. That's really all I want to do. It's such a gift. You're talking to a guy who worked many, many jobs his whole life, not good ones. To have the gift of to be able to do this with my day, I will never take for granted. I work very hard, and if people don't like it, that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. I need to do it. If I don't do it, I'm gonna have headaches. As my brother used to say, if I don't draw after 3 days, I start getting headaches. Yeah, you start having withdrawals. You need to be creative. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, you know, and again, I know your listeners are more writers. And I'm a writer too. I love to write. I write by, singing, you know, writing songs. Writing's incredible, but it's all the same. It doesn't matter. It's all being a creative. The big lessons are the important ones, you know. I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm so sorry.
No, you're not talking too much at all. I think that you bring up some good points with the idea of, you know, embracing your creativity, understanding your creativity, what your creativity looks like for you. And you've talked about, you know, the idea of embracing the freedom of what you want to express, exploring that expression. And it transfers across mediums, you know, like writing, songwriting, dance, all those.
Well, you know, I love stand-up comedy. They talk about, you know, you're not going to find your voice for about 4 years in stand-up comedy. And what they mean is you're not going to find yourself. You're exploring. And the harder and faster you do that, the sooner you'll get there. You know, people, you know, on Instagram, you have a lot of people and a lot of amazing people. And some I really love beginners. I really love seeing people with talent, but who are still in that process of trying to find themselves. And they're doing it through different means. Like, you know, there's some great artists out there who draw just like Jim Lee. You know, and they're drawing all these drawings of, and that's a comic. If you don't know, he's a very famous comic book artist. But people spend all this time working on, like, look, it looks just like the Jim Lee drawing, and they're very proud of that. And there is a lot of work to that. That's awesome. What they're not doing is finding their style. They're not finding, as the comedians say, find your voice. Who are you? We know we have a Jim Lee. Who are you, Greg? Who are you, Rasta? Who are you, Ben? BC, who are you? The sooner you get there, the more bridges you go, but it takes time. You're not going to just do that. You have to cross bridges. You have to do the thing for years and years and years and years. And I still don't think of me, and people like, oh, you're a, you know, the people are very complimentary. I'll say that. And I will say, oh, well, thank you. I am forever a student. And I mean it. There are so many incredible artists that I see every day on Instagram that are professionals. I mean, real professionals. And you just jaw drop. And it's great. I would say to people, don't let that discourage you. There's always going to be a faster gun out there. There's always going to be other people with other talents. But remember something. You are unique. You're the only one. You're the only Rasta. You're the only guy. That is you. And, you know, people, you know, I want to be a famous artist one day. Well, remember Charles Schulz from the Peanuts, the artist who made Snoopy and Charlie Brown. Yeah. You can compare his drawings to a Jim Lee from Marvel Comics, DC Comics. And some people go, well, he's awful. There's no question. And you go, yeah, but he's one of the most famous American iconic artists of our time. And it's simple little squiggly drawings because his writing was involved. His humor was there. His soul is in it. And there's only one Charles Schulz. So it doesn't matter. That's my point. It doesn't matter if you're Charles Schulz, Jackson Pollock, a Picasso. It doesn't matter. What matters is you're honest with yourself and you put it out there. And you find yourself and try and be and kill your ego. The thing that's going to stop you from doing that is your ego. Always, always. I'm not saying your confidence. Have confidence. You have to. But you also, it's always a balance. It's like being on that surfboard, riding that wave. You have to balance your confidence, your insecurity. My insecurities, my weaknesses, my the things I'm not good at, they decide my work. You know, those things are just as powerful. You know, Mike Mignola, who drew Hellboy, and he drew, you know, incredible artist, one of my favorites. I listened to an interview with him, and he had talked about, like, I wanted to get into a draw my own universe where I didn't have to draw telephones. And I didn't have to draw a car or a, you know, because when you're a comic book artist, you have to set the story. So sometimes it's in an office building, sometimes it's in a street, and you're drawing things that you really don't care to draw, but you have to. And you're like, I got to draw a phone. 15th brick wall. Right, 15th brick wall. You're so bored, you know. So he decided, well, I'm going to try and create a landscape where I don't have to do that. That is a... You know, and I loved him being forthright about his limitations. He's an incredible artist. And all he's talking about are his limitations. But his limitations made his style. Don't be afraid of the things you can't do. Sometimes you can embrace them. Like me as a musician, I know 7 chords, maybe, on a guitar. I'm not a piano player as far as a pianist goes. I've been playing for almost 25 years, but I couldn't sit down and play sheet music. I can't. I'm a chord man like Bob Dylan. He plays 5 chords and he sings a song. It's no different on the piano. You learn little frailments here and there, but I only play with about 3 fingers on each hand. I don't play traditionally because nothing I've ever done in my life has been through school or through education, or I never sat down with a piano teacher. My mother said, look, it showed me the C chord and left me alone. She was a piano teacher. And I went, I just want to play rock and roll. I don't want to learn piano. I just want to play Let It Be from the Beatles. How do I do that? And she said, well, here, these are called chords. Let me show you the chords on the piano. And I took it from there. That was the only lesson I ever had. She left and I started writing songs. And now flash forward. And a lot of that has turned into, wow, you play really differently. It's unique. It's you have a style. It's not lazy, but it's also not what we've always heard. I had a friend who went to art college and they pounded everything, all her uniqueness out of her. They really did a job on her and she's a fantastic artist. But she said, I came out of art school paralyzed because they had taken everything that made me away to show me the conventional road. I'm all for learning, but you have to protect yourself. You have to protect yourself because they will take it from you because everyone in that room who's judging your artwork also has an ego. And they're not going to let some freshman come in and wow them, which is funny because what if it is wow? What if Picasso walked in as a freshman? But our egos won't let us do that. So that's what I mean by kill your ego. It does nothing for you. It does nothing for it. Just gets me in trouble. And I work really. I remind myself all the time of that. When I correspond with people on Instagram, you know, I think to myself, what would Mr. Rogers say? Because he's beautiful. He's a beautiful person. He's a beautiful representative of people. And I think to myself, I want to be my best self. So when I talk to someone who's young and they're just started drawing and they say something, or make a comment on one of my drawings, and I write them back. And I don't know why, because I'm nothing crazy, nothing astronomical, but kids, you get this feeling that kids are like, oh, because they'll say, you know, oh, nothing like your stuff. I'll never be that good, or this and that. And I just, no, you're an amazing talent. Look how far you've come. All I've done is had more decades of time, and I've crossed more bridges. I just kept walking forward. But you're 17. I'm in my 40s. You're 17. You just have more bridges to cross. That's all. We're just at different times of our life. There's no better or worse. You're farther along than I was when I was 17. Remember that. Well, it's important. It's important. And I give it back to them. I try not to feed my ego. If someone gives me a compliment, I try really hard to say thank you, and I'm appreciative, and I am, of course, but I try and make it about them. Like, no, you're amazing. Look, you're fantastic. Keep going. You're great. And I can learn from you. I can learn from anybody. You know, and you have to be open to that, or you're always going to be stagnant. Your ego is your worst self sometimes. You know, confidence is important. You have to balance it. I feel like I'm talking too much. I'm sorry.
I appreciate what you've shared, and I think that you've shared some really great messages about growth and embracing your identity and finding your identity in that process, and sharing your own process that you've to reach the point that you've gotten to where you are as an artist, and the idea of, you know, you're never truly done, but you keep going, right? You can keep growing, keep feeling yourself out, and expanding your edges and discovering new things through the people you interact with, and through your own experiences people share with you.
And yeah, exactly.
These are very, you know, important messages for especially younger artists and both writers and other forms of art to hear and understand. And I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with me and to share this on the writers.
Oh man, this is crazy. It's talking about ego, you know, everyone your whole life, everyone does their little interview with themselves in their mind, especially if you're a creative. Well, you know, you ask yourself the question that you think someone would ask you, and you answer it, and you've been doing that since you were 15 years old. Everyone has that. You know, everyone's the hero in their own movie. This is the first interview outside of my freshman year of high school where I wrote a song, and the high school newspaper came over to me and asked me about my song. I was like deer in the headlights. I didn't know what to say. It was so weird. And because you don't know what, you know, you're on the spot. And, you know, when you wrote me a couple of weeks ago, I was that kid again. I was just like, someone wants to talk to me. okay. And then you get caught up in the, well, I hope I don't get overwhelmed, or I say this something stupid, or well, should I talk about this, should I not, and then you're like, this is all, it's silly, don't get in your own way, just be honest, and all the things, we all have them, and I can't thank you enough. I'm flattered, and I can't believe you reached out to me, of all people. And all week I've been thinking about it and fighting with ego and fighting with insecurity and going, well, I don't know if I'm worth talking to, but I'll just be me. And you know, I quick story. I had an art showing. I haven't had many art showings in my life, but the owner of a comic book store saw my work and said, hey, I would love you to have an art show here. And I was floored. I couldn't believe it. So I had an art show and we made flyers and we put stuff out, and I went early and I put up all my work. And like many artists understand that feeling of like, wow, this is, and again, before Instagram, before like, this is, you're pulling things out of that dark portfolio where no one's seen them but yourself. And you're like, wow, I get to, who knows who will be there? Maybe Andy Warhol will be there. No, he's not. So I put all the things up and it went great. You know, my friend John Malloy, he played. We played music together there. My folks came. Of course, you got to invite the middle kid. I have to invite the parents. Everything went well. The owner, a couple days later, said to me, you know, some art students were here. And I immediately got like, ooh, you know, people who know what they're doing.
Right. They've been trained for this.
Oh my goodness. You know, you have that feeling, you know. And he said, they were raving. He said, it was something interesting. They were loving all your work. I said, oh, that's great. I felt like, oh, that's wonderful, you know. And he said, and then I told them that you had never gone to art school. And he said, everything changed. He said, suddenly they were picking apart things and suddenly they had critiques. And that was a lesson to me. And I don't put them down for that. I understand. And I'm not putting education down. Please. I don't want anyone to think that. I am not. I would have loved to have gone to art school. But there's something to be said about going back to that movie critic who stubbed a toe before he went and saw the film. Be careful who you invest in with your influences and opinions that you take into your heart, because things may be tainted with ego. Things may be, you know, oh, you know, this guy didn't go to school. We now have in our minds have the right to judge it, and people are free to do that. I understand. There's a lesson there that you don't need to be superior to contribute something creatively. It's not a competition. You don't have to put others down to make yourself feel good. In fact, you feel good when you lift others up. Who sometimes you feel like they could use it, because God knows I could have many times in my life.
I can think of times in my life when being uplifted is something that helped me to push through difficult times. Yeah. Of learning new skills.
Yeah, you'll feed on it and you'll live off that one compliment for years. You will. And if you're not careful, those critiques and those things that are maybe not always positive, or you don't know really where they're coming from, if it's really in a genuine critique sense, you can, if you let them, they can eat you up. Don't let them eat you up, you know. Last thing I'll say, my mom and I were driving in the car and we're listening to on the radio comes from West Side Story, A Place for Us by Barbara Streisand. And it's beautiful. She loves Barbara, right? And we're listening to it in the car. It's just a beautiful song. There's a place for us. Great song, beautiful. And we got home and I said, well, let me show you, you know, my version of this. And the one I like to listen to. And she said, okay. And I showed her the Tom Waits version. And it sounds, and if you don't know Tom Waits, he's incredible. He sounds like your 75-year-old grandfather who walked over to a broken down piano with half the keys not rising after you've touched them, and out of tune. And he does his version of that song.
Oh, please.
Very Louis Armstrong type, but even grittier. It sounds like his voice was ripped through glass.
Oh, time, please, for old man, we're halfway there.
This beautiful jazz behind him, the beautiful band behind him. And she didn't know what to do because it wasn't pretty. It wasn't beautiful, but it was so beautiful. And it touches you. And it was sincere and it was real. And I'm not putting Barbara down, but there was no selling factor. It was just, it was warm in your gut, like after drinking hot cocoa. There was something about it that just, it was suddenly your favorite song in the entire world. And it's on Blue Valentine, I believe. It's a great Tom Waits album, by the way. Go check it out. Incredible, incredible. But most people think a thing and they think a certain way. Whoever's listening to this, you're a creative. Think your way. You don't have to be Barbara Streisand. You can be Tom Waits and sing the same song and actually get me to cry versus just, oh, that's pretty. You know, be yourself. Tom was Tom. He was Tom in that moment. He liked that song. He rarely did covers, never did someone else's song, but he did. There's a somewhere from West Side Story. And it's the greatest recording of it personally that I've ever heard. It's incredible. Go find it and you'll know what I'm talking about. So, all this can be wrapped up to say what they told you in the third grade, be yourself. be who you are. And it's so true. Those lessons you learned in kindergarten, it's all you need in life. All the things they taught you in kindergarten, it's really all you need. Okay, I'm going to stop. Keep talking. I'm so sorry.
That's a beautiful message to go in. And I think it's been wonderful having you on the Writer's Triangle. It was a pleasure talking with you, hearing about your experiences, hearing about your art, your development of your art, your philosophies about art. And I really enjoyed it. And I want to thank all of our beautiful Cinnabar Moths for listening as well. BC, can you tell us where we can find you on social media?
Of course on Instagram, I've talked about that. It's I'm reading off of a piece of paper because I'm terrible at this stuff. It's BC Foster 77 on Instagram. That's where you see all my art. There's also a link there for an Etsy shop, which is BC Foster Art on Etsy. And we have all kinds of fun stuff on there, from candles to cards to sweatshirts and all kinds of stuff just with my drawings on it. We like making that stuff. It's just fun for us. For my music, all my albums are on Bandcamp. And that's bcfostermusic.bandcamp.com. And a lot of records on there. My life and music is all there. And there's some, even some Christmas stuff. So if you want to listen to it, but if you want to hear some of my writing, that's where you'll get it. So
I think that's awesome that we're able to, in this modern day and age, have such great access to that history. And for everybody listening, be sure to visit cinnabarmoth.com, where you can check out the transcripts, and we'll also have the link to all of BC's social media. Once again, BC, it's been a pleasure talking with you. It was a joy.
Rasta, thank you so much. This is such an honor. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.